Okay, we're basically on. Welcome to the podcast. With me today is Rabbi Shimon Felix, Shoshana Keats-Jaskol, Ben Waxman, and I'm your erstwhile host, Leon Bubis, or Aryeh Bubis, depending on which decade you knew me. We have two topics today, and the first one is Trump and the Jews. And Shoshana, I saw on your Facebook page that you were kind of upset with the UN resolution and Obama's role in it, and you said, well, you know, thank God, basically, I don't know if you use the words thank God, but, you know, Trump is coming in and that's probably going to be better.
No, that's not what I said.
Okay.
What I said was that Obama and Kerry managed to do the impossible,
right?
Which is to make me not dread the 20th of January. So, I just want to make it clear.
You're not dreading the 20th of January now?
No. I mean, all right. Let's back up a minute. If you had asked me, I was one of those people who did not see this coming. In a million years, I would never have voted for Trump. I cannot believe that he won the election. And as a woman and as a person, I'm appalled that he's going to be the president of the United States. Because even though I've made my life here, I love the United States of America. I lived there. I grew up there. And my most 99% of my family and friends are there, or family, I should say. And watching Trump throughout this entire process has been just one shock after another. I'm one of those people who kind of believe in being a good person first and foremost. And the things that he says and the way that he spoke just appalled. Okay, I'm one of those people who just could not believe for one second that this man was going to be president. So I was, and I still am in certain ways dreading January 20th. I think the choices he's made for his cabinet are shocking. I think that he doesn't have a clue what he's doing. I mean, I still feel that way. So for me to say that I'm not dreading January 20th anymore, it had to be a big deal. And for Obama to do what he did, for Kerry to speak as he did, for me, it really, you know, I prefer, the one thing about Trump is at least you know where he's coming from. You know, at least you don't turn around and be like, well, I don't know where that came from. And even though I've always felt that Obama's foreign policy was horrible and he had no idea what he was doing, I never really expect this. And so that's what I meant when I said I'm no longer dreading it. But I'd rather the evil that I can see near me than the one I don't know about, I guess. I know it's not the phrase, but that's what I think of when I know what they're doing now.
I was in the States recently, and I met a lot of modern Orthodox people, and we can talk about the Haredi vote. The Haredi vote apparently went overwhelmingly for Trump. Even Satmar, who was told not to vote to Trump, they studied the results in the Satmar areas. They overwhelmingly voted for Trump. And the question is, I guess the 64,000 shekel question is Trump going to be good for the Jews? And the bulk of the modern Orthodox population, the Frumer in the United States and the people here said, yes, Trump is going to be better for the Jews. Let's vote for Trump. Is that the way you feel?
Well, what does that mean, better for the Jews?
Better for Israel. You know what I mean? I guess in America, they're basically saying, like, Ben doesn't want to talk about U.S. matters because, you know, but it's important who the president of the United States is vis-a-vis Israel. And they said that basically they did a shikul, they made a judgment, and they said, you know, I don't know how sophisticated it was, but they said, who is going to be better for Israel? Trump is going to be better for the Jews. And that's, isn't that what you're saying? That, look, I mean, I dread him, he's horrible, but he's going to be our friend, he's going to be better for us than the alternatives.
Okay, so unlike a lot of Americans, I would never vote for a president of a country for another country. American Jews, I should say, sorry. I don't believe in that. He's the American president, and the American president needs to take care of America first. Okay, I believe that. But that's not to say that I obviously would like a friend in the White House, but at the end of the day, I don't believe that it's the president of the United States that makes a difference to my country overall, to Israel overall. So it's a difficult, I don't like that question. I don't like who's good for the Jews, because I don't think that's a Jew should be asking that question if they're living in another country. If you're living in Israel, you can ask which candidate's going to be good for the Jews. I don't think it's right for a Jew living in another country for their first priority to be who's going to be good for Israel. I may be...
No, but you could discuss...
minority here, but that's always
good. You can discuss it in the third person, you know, from... I'm saying... If you're saying, I don't want to opine on who should be the president of the United States, and I can understand that. Should, therefore, I mean, I can put it back to you, should the American Jews be expressing their, you know, supporting Trump because he will be better for Israel? Are they interfering in Israeli politics?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you could certainly ask the question, but as an American, if I wasn't Jewish, I was an American, and my fellow Americans who were Jews were voting simply and solely on that question, I'd be angry. I mean, it's, you know, you're living in America, then you need to vote for the person who's going to be best for the United States of America. That's how I feel. Who's going to be better for Israel? I really don't know enough about Trump. And I know he talks a lot. I know he tweets a lot. I know he does say that he's going to be pro-Israel. I say that he, you know, believes that Israel needs to be strong and secure, and I think that's fantastic. If I can just go based on the words that he says about Israel, then yes, my answer would have to be, I believe he'll be good for Israel, but that's only based on the few things I've heard him say.
Okay, at this point I'll bring in Rabbi Shimon Felix, who has prepared extensively and is going to read from written notes here today.
Thank you. I agree with a lot of what Shoshana said. I'm appalled by the fact that this clown is the president of the United States. Not so differently than, you know, I would be appalled if some lunatic was the prime minister of England or the chancellor of Germany. I mean, we're part of a world and we're part of the Western world especially. And you don't want to see incompetent, you know, lunatics running the, you don't want to see the lunatics running the asylum. So it's shocking. It really is shocking. I agree with Shoshana. There's something wrong with, certainly if you live in America, with focusing on how good a presidential candidate might be for a third country, for another country. But, you know, people vote for people for all kinds of reasons. So, you know, that's the way it is. But I have a couple of issues. One is, I don't think Trump can be trusted to cross the street on the green and not walk across on the red. I can imagine so many scenarios where he would happily sell Israel down the river. His love affair with this butcher, Putin, who's just, he's a mass murderer. And he certainly is thinking in classic imperial terms of taking over the world. And I think he's thinking that way with his pal, you know, his new friend, Trump. And I could see Israel, just a scenario, being a prize to Assad. You know, Putin wants to make sure Assad stays in power. You know what? Give him the Golan Heights. That'll make him look good in the Arabs' eyes, and it'll all work out better that way. And it'll convince Trump to convince Bibi to give, who knows? Like, any crazy thing could happen with these lunatics running the show. So to trust the odd tweet from a guy who really has no self-control, I don't have to explain what's wrong with Trump, we all see it. It doesn't make any sense to me. So that's one side of it. The other side of the coin is, I really don't get this anger that people have for Kerry and Obama and the UN resolution. I just don't get it.
Can I interrupt
yes?
you? Because I just want to go to the, we'll get that, I guess, in the second topic. I just want to get in here very, very
sure.
shortly. Something that got me, that with respect to Trump, it was the appointment of the ambassador, again, elect to Israel, which really got me, who wrote in a Jerusalem Post article called Obama an anti-Semite, said that Jews, you know, mentioned J Street, but of similar ilk, were worse than capos in the cities in Europe, the ghettos in Europe, who cooperated with the Germans. And Shoshana, what you mentioned and Ray Felix mentioned is this idea of, you know, you don't have to be on this. America has different interests than Israel. And they often, I think in the end, they happen to be the same interest: peace, stability. America's a good country. You know, it's on the right side. It's been on the right side of history. But they don't have to agree in the short term on every issue. So the notion that America has to agree with whoever is in power in Israel and whoever the prime minister is, and if they disagree, and even if the disagreement may be stark, but it's a legitimate disagreement, then that person is an anti-Semite, they're an enemy of Israel. I found that so repugnant and so damaging to perhaps the U.S.-Israel relations for the long term. Everyone sees gets very excited in the short term, but over the long term, if you're a, if you're active in the Democratic Party and you say, well, the Jews are supporting these type of people who deny blacks the right to vote. They want to take away Medicare and Medicaid from and Obamacare from poor people, and all they're concerned about is Israel, and we've given them so much and aided Israel so much, and someone goes ahead and calls the President of the United States an anti-Semite. So I find that very worrisome, and he's like Donald's man. He's going to be, you know, the representative to Israel. And oddly enough, often the American ambassador has to tell Israel, listen, you know, you're not Beseder, or we disagree with you. Is this going to be the guy who's going to tell Israel, you're not Beseder, or we disagree with you? I mean, it just seems so surreal and so damaging to the long-term interests of Jews in America and Jews here.
Well, I, you know, yes, there's a lot of interesting stuff there. I'd like to focus on one little bit of that, and also some of the stuff that Shoshana said about this, which is the almost universal support that Orthodox Jews did show for Trump, and how, as you correctly say, Leon, that
I don't understand. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that people make statements left and right about the overall. I don't know where are those statistics from.
All over the place.
I know. I don't think that there's any doubt that you can, again, in the Haredi world, overwhelmingly they voted. Chabad came out and said, vote. I mean, the Kesher between them and Trump. Satmar, they actually, people did studies of the Satmar areas. They were told by their...
Satmar's off the wall.
If you go to New Jersey, I went, I mean, it's not scientific, but I spoke to as many people as I can. I spoke to people in Manhattan who live in Manhattan. I spoke to people in the modern arts community in New Jersey. They were almost to a man voting for Trump.
I did see a statistic. I think in the forward, that the numbers of Orthodox Jews voting for Trump or Hillary was exactly the mirror image of the non-Orthodox Jews voting for Hillary rather than Trump. I don't remember the numbers, but they were lopsided.
They're close to like 77 to 33,
something like that.
80 to 20.
They were lopsided. They were lopsided. So also anecdotally, I mean, I have a lot of people in my family who I don't know how I'm going to look at in America, people and in Israel, but. So let's assume that the statistics and the anecdotal evidence is true. My sense is that it's not simply a support for Israel, which I agree with you, Shoshana. There is something funny with that kind of approach. I don't think it's only that. I think that just as liberal American Jews, progressive, non-Orthodox American Jews, are accused of turning liberalism and liberal values and tikkun olam, et cetera, into their religion, that they're not really Jews. What they really are is liberals. I think that the mirror image is very true. I think Orthodox Jews have turned conservative values into their religious default position. It's remarkable. It's unbelievable, because at least the progressive Jews, they're right. Caring for the poor and the hungry and the widow and the orphan and the stranger, those are central, important, classic Jewish values. We thought of them first. The values they espouse coming from the conservative position are not Jewish. They're simply not Jewish values. Some of them might be right, some of them might be wrong. You can argue about them, but a strict capitalist, a free market, you know, Judaism, classical Judaism may well be a free market kind of system or allow for a free market, but it's not one of our highest values. And you have these weird situations where people like Aguda, you know, the Haredi organization, are hand in hand with the evangelicals, with the Christian right, to do things like oppose abortion, which is not the halacha. We are much more liberal about giving abortions than what I hear from the American right, from the American Christian right. And I'm going to say the nastiest thing I know how to say. I am waiting for the day when the daughter of some Aguda leader, God forbid, needs an abortion for a reason that the halakha would permit an abortion. And because her stupid father decided, no, I'm with the evangelicals. We're going to stop women from getting abortions. It'll be illegal for her. Because that's what these people are doing. They're jettisoning Jewish values in favor of values that are evangelical right-wing, conservative right-wing. This nastiness, this suspicion of the poor. They're all freeloaders, etc. I don't know where it comes from, but to my mind, and I'll finish with this, to my mind, a lot of the support for Trump comes from the same meanness of spirit that the American right has shown in their support for Trump.
I have to say, I have some family members, and I was shocked, really shocked, when I heard that they were voting for Trump. But they're not like that at all when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to abortion's not even something on the ballot for them, that they're thinking either way. If their wife, God forbid, needed it, they would go and get it. But it comes down to, for them, it just seemed like Hillary, like, look, honestly, it seemed like Obama was just taking the country off the rails. And for me, I didn't not like Obama. It's a very funny thing how people say, I don't like him, he's an anti-Semite. You know, you don't know the man personally. You've never met the man personally. I don't know if I like him, I don't like it. I bet you if I was at a party with him, I'd get along very well. Seems like a great, fun guy. He's an idiot when it comes to foreign policy. Domestic policy, I haven't been there in about 10 years, so I don't know well enough, and I didn't see it well enough. But I can say that they were just sick of Obama. And they felt that Hillary was going to continue the same thing. Personally, this notion of safe spaces, this idea of BDS, college campuses aren't safe for Jews, and it's not because of the right wing. It's because of the left wing.
Yes.
College campuses are bastions of Palestinian. It's a free-for-all if you're pro-Palestinian, and it's hell if you're a Jew who's trying to make a point. And that's because of this entire left PC idea of safe spaces and of people being oppressed. They know, these idiots don't even know their history. You ask them the history of this country, of Palestine, they have no idea. They believe whatever they're told. And this mushy-brained, moronic notion is just taking over the entire country as we see it. And I believe that is what had them voting Trump. It wasn't that they wanted Trump. It was they did not want Obama, Hillary, any longer. And I think Obama ruined Hillary's chances. I don't think she was as nutty as him, but we'll never know. And I think that it's difficult to pin all the Trump voters as being, you know, right-wing and whatever, crazy people. I don't think it's easy to say they're all misogynists, whatever. They just, that wasn't as important enough. His grabbing of whatever was not important enough for them to bring Hillary in and continue Obama.
Okay. Maybe we can move to the second topic, which seems to be inextricably linked, which is the UN resolution, and then followed a few days later by John Kerry's speech. So I'll turn it up. Ben, do you want to come in now? Since these things basically, I mean, they're not U.S. politics. They're something that happened on the world stage, which are directly aimed at Israel. Aimed is a strong word, perhaps.
Okay. What a... throw out a question?
Yeah, I'm saying, what did you think? Was the UN resolution the worst thing that's happened to us? How do you see it? What do you think of John Kerry's speech?
I was very impressed with his speech.
Why?
The man knows his details. He was talking about building permits on the Dead Sea in Area C. I don't know about those things, and he knew about it.
Absolutely right.
And I was very impressed.
Okay, beyond...
What I didn't understand was, why did he make it now, that speech now, and not 4 years ago?
But don't you think that people... I mean, you can make the argument that the American government has been gently telling Israel for the past, I don't know how many years, the same thing, but in a very polite way with meanings, and this was a frustration that arose. I just have to say that I saw an article, I was searching material to send you guys, and I saw something that Alan Dershowitz wrote. And Alan Dershowitz, I think you, there's no greater friend of Israel and no one who spends a lot of his time trying to defend Israel. And he wrote 2 weeks before the resolution, in the middle of December, he wrote that the legalization bill to legalize land that had been taken for Arabs from settlement, basically to, you know, solve the Amona problem, and violating the Geneva Convention by building illegally, might lead to a condemnation resolution in the UN. This is, again, a true friend of Israel. I don't think anyone can say Dershowitz is on the left wing. So you're saying, Ben, why did it happen? Just a second, Shoshana. So you're saying, Ben is saying, why did it happen now? And you have someone like Alan Dershowitz saying, it's going to happen.
The American government has been telling the Israeli government the same thing for 40 years. Decide what you want.
Yeah, and?
And when you decide, then you can make a policy. Do you want the land, or do you want... But with the land, you have to take the people. It's as simple as that. They've said it time and time and time again. If you don't want the land, or excuse me, if you don't want the people, give up the land.
I also saw Tzachi Hanegbi made a speech to some organization on Shabbat, who's a member of the Likud and being very, he was formerly head of the basically security committee in the defense, security defense committee in the Knesset. He's held important jobs. And he came out and said, we the Likud do not believe in Sipuach. We do not believe in nationalizing the West Bank and Yehuda and Shomron. We're against it. We think it would be disastrous for Israel. Those were his words. It would be a disaster. Shoshana, I put it to you, I mean, a bit of a devil's advocate, but for the sake of conversation, is that an anti-Semitical statement? Is Tzachi Hanegbi selling us down the river by saying Bennett and these people are disastrous for Israel? The Beit Yehudi is taking us down a dangerous path?
So I don't use the word anti-Semite very easily. I think it's absurd to do so. And obviously I'm not going to say that Tzachi Hanegbi is an anti-Semite simply because he's saying something against another Jew. I think that just to, my take on the resolution, the U.S. did turn its back on Israel, not because it doesn't believe in the settlements, that's nothing new, but because it allowed Israel to be taken down in the U.N. Security Council in a way that was so flagrant, in a way that was so... they were not supposed to do that. What do I mean? They said that they weren't going to do that. And so saying, oh, well, we agree with it, it's ridiculous. Because we're not even talking about, yes, you agree with it. I understand you agree with it. Again, as Ben said, well, where were you 4 years ago? Where were you? It was a cheap shot. It was done on purpose. And I do think it's damaging. Now, you know, the woman of faith, I kind of sit back and laugh. But on the other hand, when it comes to the settlements, it's a big, big, big problem. And when I say, I'm not, you know, stating the obvious, but it's a problem because nobody's really looking at it. It's being made into, well, yes or no, or this or that. And instead of really taking a look, there are people here. There are people who want a better life. There are also people who have been raised on a diet of nothing to do with the future, everything to do with, and dying for my land. And it's not right. The Palestinian leadership does not give its people whatsoever any chance at a future, at all. Their future is to die as a martyr. They're not giving, there's billions and billions and billions of dollars from dozens of countries around the world, and it doesn't go to the people who it should go to. It doesn't go to infrastructure. It doesn't go to colleges. It doesn't go to building a future. So before we even talk about what we're going to do, there is so much that needs to be dealt with. So much that needs to be dealt with, and no one is taking the Palestinian leadership to task, and they are the ones who are keeping their people down. Because until they decide that they want to rule for their people, not rule, but for their people, there is nothing to discuss. Nothing to discuss. Who is going to take care of people? You cannot create a state with a leadership that simply teaches children how to die. I'm sorry. It's a ridiculous thing to talk about settlements. I mean, you should talk about settlements, but there's no responsibility. There's no... where is anyone taking a look at Palestinian leadership and saying, what are you doing? Where are you going for peace? The whole conversation is so absurd that it's difficult to discuss. Honestly.
Yes, I agree with a lot of what was just said by Ben and Shoshana. I think tactically, the way Obama and Kerry have handled the last few weeks is just ridiculous. And I agree with Shoshana that his foreign policy record is less than sterling. It just seems to not be his strong point, to put it to make an understatement. And to, you know, the last few weeks of his term to really put Israel in such a difficult position and really open what might be, I hope it doesn't happen, but the floodgates of BDS and anti-Israel activity over, as Ben said, you know, and I think we all understand, There's an old policy. We all know that the West basically sees the settlements as illegal, and what's the big deal? And to now sort of dramatically have this passed in the UN really is not tactically a good idea at all for a friend of Israel to do. So there is that. I will say, however, that I don't think we can push the question about, as you put it so correctly, you want the land, you want the people, you want the people, you want the land. I mean, come on. This is crucial. The fact that the Palestinians are really awful, and they've been behaving awfully, and they've had opportunity after opportunity from people who did want to give back the land. I mean, Ehud Barak, 16 years ago, we all heard on the news, hour after hour, while he was at Camp David, got 94%, 95%, and later on again, 96% in subsequent talks. It's ridiculous that the Palestinians said no to this, and it really does question, it forces one to question their seriousness. But be that as it may, we have our decisions to make and our questions to answer. And we can't just keep pretending that this is not the elephant in the room. It's just ridiculous to talk the way people are talking about Kerry and Obama, as if, you know, Kerry is like he's taking a page from Mein Kampf, and he's a Nazi and an anti-Semite for saying what? I want there to be a Jewish state, and I want it to be democratic. Oh my God, what a Nazi, what an anti-Semite to say such a thing. He's absolutely right. Every word, as Ben said, it was a good speech. Every word was true. The emphasis is off. The timing is off. I agree with all that. But we have to take care of our own problems. And the question, if we're going to keep building the settlements, it makes giving the Palestinians a viable state less and less possible. If it's less and less possible, the one state solution becomes the only solution. And then that's the end of the Jewish state. I have yet to hear a real answer from anyone on the right. They work with voodoo demographics. The Arabs have smaller birth rates, and they like moving to New York, and the Jews have a higher birth rate. It's ridiculous. So it won't be 50-50. It'll be 52-48. It's crazy. Who can live like that? It's not a Jewish state. Or they secretly want to kill them all. They secretly say, well, there'll be a war. You'll see. It won't go on forever. You know, the further right wing. So neither of those things are acceptable to me. I don't think voodoo demographics is going to work. They're not going to disappear. We're not going to kill them all. We're not going to deport them all. It's not going to happen. We have to answer this question for ourselves. The fact that the Palestinians are encouraging their children to be shahidim, to be martyrs, yes, it's horrible. It's inhuman, absolutely. But that doesn't patter us. It doesn't make us not obliged to find answers to these crucial questions that we face.
Of course not. But you understand that Kerry's speech was 90% about us.
Because we have we have the choice. You see, we unfortunately are in the position where we have the land. You see, so we are always in that position. And Peres has died already, but he was also, you know, accused of all these crimes. And one of the smart things that when Peres did was he realized is if we offer even internationally or openly what we're prepared to do, and the other side doesn't accept it, then we're off the hook. Right. And he was very successful in that. No, just a second. But in the present policies of the Likud, like Ben says, you want the land, you want the people. No one, the Likud, like any political party, wants to stay in office. And it cannot come out to its voters and say, this is what we're prepared to give, this is what we're prepared to do. I'm not talking whether there's another side for the moment. So we're stuck in this quagmire, and we're seen in the whole world as the evildoer, which is not correct, and is it all our fault? But Rav Shimon said, we've got to do something because it's our problem. They may have caused it, they may be the unreasonable party, but sooner or later, we're going to be in trouble. I just want to say two things about Obama. I'm not going to defend his foreign policy. I think it can be defended, but I'm not going to defend it. George W. Bush. There was an article in the foreword. Under George W., the greatest friend Israel's ever had, there were 14 resolutions condemning Israel during the George W. Bush presidency. And this was not a resolution which condemned Israel. It's basically restated UN resolutions, but it did not condemn Israel. So again, you know, I have to agree. The point is, what are we going to do? That's what interests me. And the other thing is BDS. People don't know, but 70%, I think, of Israeli trade, at least 60%, is with Europe. And the United States, to my knowledge, has been blocking European efforts to go before the UN, all sorts of one-sided efforts under Obama for the past 8 years. And the question I have is when, and we've had this tremendous siyata deshmaya with conservative leaders in France, Sarkozy, who ended up not liking Bibi, and three English prime ministers who love Israel, and Germany, who Angela Merkel, who is an active supporter of Israel, doesn't happen to like Bibi. But the question I have is, when you get new leadership, when all of a sudden that Trump kind of effect unleashes all sorts of weird movements in Europe, and all of a sudden you have sorts of weird governments, and you no longer have responsible leaders, when it comes to the day that Europe says, we are going to boycott Israel, do you think that Donald Trump can save us if 70% of our trade or our economy is dependent on Europe? What is going to happen? Like, again, what miracle is going to happen to save us? What's going to be?
I don't understand your question.
I'm saying...
You're asking Donald Trump is Mashiach?
No, but I'm saying that the point, the idea of blaming Obama or blaming Kerry for a difficulty... It's not necessarily all our difficulty, but this, again, we have either we're going to have a one-state solution, which means the end of the Jewish people, the end of the state of Israel, or we have to think of some alternative to it. And the question is, either you're religious, right? Felix alluded to it. You know, you want Eretz Yisrael Shleima, you want this holy war. You're ideological in that sense. But why would someone believe that we can sort of take on the whole world, and that we can live in this state in which we will eventually be outnumbered by Palestinians?
I just don't understand something. We have offered the Palestinians a state. Why are we being blamed for this if there's no Palestinian state?
Where I think that the idea is that people are blaming us for the settlement. What would happen if we said, you know what, we're not going to build outside of settlement blocks, right? We're not going to have a law that allows land to be taken away, and we'll have a status quo, and we'll sit tight, and we'll make our best offer. And if the Palestinians don't accept it, so fine. What's wrong with doing that?
They get that, and they didn't.
So why do we have to keep on building? What is the point of that?
Explain something to me. We've offered. They said no. Right?
They said no a long time ago.
It happened at least twice, right?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
If that's the case, we're supposed to just wait for them to say yes.
No, but Shoshana, I absolutely agree that both Ehud Barak and then Ehud Olmert offered the whole thing, the moon, the whole thing, and they said no. I agree. However, if you mean to say, well, they had their chance again, they said no. So now what's your punchline? So, okay, that's it. It's ours, and we're going to build wherever we want? Because although that might be fair in some sort of, I don't know, if we're playing some sort of sport, it might be fair. But you got all these Palestinians living there, and they're not going to become Zionists. They're not going to mitgayer. They're not going to become Jews. They're not going to convert. So we're stuck. You're right. It's not fair. It hasn't been fair for a very long time. If it was fair, they'd all pack up and go away because we won and they lost, and that's the end of it. But it doesn't work that way. They're very stubborn people. They really are. They have this thing, I imagine you guys know, tsumud, hem tsumudim, lakarka. It's an Arabic word that's just like the Hebrew word. They're stuck to, they're close to the land. They don't want to leave. By the way, you saw the same thing in Aleppo. People like didn't want to leave Aleppo. It reminds me of that Jackie Mason thing about the people in trailer parks and there's a tornado. Well, we're going to rebuild. And a Jew is, I'm out of here. I'm going to New York. This is crazy. I'm not going to live here in Kansas. But that's the way they are. They're not leaving. So the fact that we've proven we're willing to compromise and we've made the offer and they say no and they keep murdering people. But that doesn't make the millions of Palestinians in the West Bank disappear. So if we then take steps that make it clear that we're keeping the West Bank with its millions of Palestinians, So we're back to square one. What kind of Jewish state can we have here? So it's like we're arguing sort of apples and oranges. Are we right and they're wrong? Yes. Have we been reasonable and them unreasonable? Yes. Have we won all the wars that they started? Yes.
Where are the speeches for 71 minutes talking to the Palestinian leadership saying, how dare you?
I agree.
You were offered a future for your country. You were offered a future for your people, and you have kept and you have turned it down.
I agree.
You are sending them to die instead of taking care of them. I'm asking you, where are the UN resolutions and where are the John Kerry's and the Obamas? Talking to the people who can actually make a difference for their people. It doesn't exist. So no, I'm not going to sit here and take responsibility for the Palestinians when their own leadership is what's keeping them down.
I certainly agree that Kerry would have, I think, won a lot more Jewish hearts and made a lot more of a difference. And no, you're right, but Anne made a lot more of a difference had he timed his speech 50-50 to say no to the Jews and 50-50 no to the Arabs, and it was 90-10. I agree.
It's the wrong muscle. It's the wrong story. You're barking up the wrong tree. Start screaming at the Palestinians. If they screamed at the Palestinians and put pressure on them, there'd be a state.
Ben?
Stop screaming at me about it.
Shoshana, sorry. I just wanted to get Ben in to close the segment. Ben, come on. On this, you've got to have a day up. We got to hear from you.
They're like a chain on our foot. We're just like, you know, if someone has an alcoholic in his family, you can do whatever you want, and you can go to Al-Anon, and you can get therapy for yourself, but that guy is still there, and he's ruining your life, and you can't get rid of him. And that's what we're stuck with. Unless we expel them, which I don't see happening anytime, we're stuck with these people, and we don't have any idea what to do about it. They're a bunch of drunks. They're horrible. They've done nothing for themselves. In that way, they're a lot like the rest of the Arab world, who
the other question more money than.
But I don't know how much pressure we can put on someone else to do the right thing. Yeah, it's. I don't think that's possible. We've tried that in very various ways, and it never works. You can't convince someone be smart. They're very dumb.
That's been a pretty lively 20 minutes of segment. Thank you, everyone, for participating. I know it's an emotional issue, but I think that's good. We all feel very fortunate to live here, and living in Eretz Yisrael always means that we live a full life. We don't have to imagine. We don't have to vicariously, you know, in America somewhere, feel that we're connected. So thank you again, and hopefully we can do it real soon. And thank you for the people who are listening to the podcast. It was great. Thank you very much.